Welcome to Discoveries, Cedars-Sinai's podcast about research and education. I'm your host, Dr. Corey Cross. Today, we'll be discussing how AI is changing the landscape for healthcare delivery. To discuss how AI is revolutionizing medicine, we have with us Dr. Sumeet Chugh, who is the Director of Artificial Intelligence in Medicine at Cedars-Sinai. Dr. Chugh, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me, and good morning.
Good morning. So in my opinion, as a physician, AI has the potential to change the relationship between doctors and patients. What's your opinion on this?
I think you're absolutely right. In fact, if we keep that as a central goal, we'll really be able to make the most of AI.
Now, in your opinion, why does it matter who develops AI? If it's big tech or doctors and researchers, why does it make a difference?
I think whether we like it or not, it's going to come at us from all directions. But I do think that there is a difference in the way that incentives are aligned in big technology when they develop AI compared to how physicians and healthcare providers develop AI and feel about it.
I would agree with that, even just looking at like medical records. You know, when they first came out, the information that we had to put in as physicians sometimes wasn't relevant, or where the relevant information was hard to find. So I would agree there's a way in which we know that we need to use it. I feel like the user should be involved in the development. I think that helps to get a better product. One of the most relevant ways I think AI can improve the healthcare system is by helping doctors and the system itself focus on where it's most advantageous to intervene and what attention we give to each patient so that we can actually have them benefit from our interventions. I think you have a way of illustrating this with implantable defibrillators. Will you tell us about this?
Yes. As you know, as a fellow physician, knowledge is a moving target. Clinical trials of the implantable defibrillators for primary prevention of sudden death that were conducted 2 to 3 decades ago are now delivering some diminishing returns. So what we need to do is to sort of have a reset of how we best identify candidates who are going to benefit the most from an implantable defibrillator. So that's really how AI can help us, is by improving our ability to find the person at highest risk of a sudden death, but who's also going to benefit the most from the defibrillator.
That makes sense. And so right now, when you implant a defibrillator into patients, how often are we correct in who we're implanting it into?
Very good question, because that's really what matters, right?
Mm-hmm.
It turns out that the best way to look at this is to say, how many times a year does the defibrillator successfully fire, and in how many patients? So when we did these clinical trials, every year, at least 10 to 15% of patients who received this defibrillator, which can potentially really save their lives, it's a remarkable device. Today, since we're doing a much better job at treating these patients for other heart disease conditions, it turns out that no more than 3%, or at most, you could stretch it to 5% of people, are going to have defibrillators that fire appropriately and save their lives every year. So it becomes sort of like you want to do a good job, but you also want to balance the cost and the benefit.
Right. And the risk, right? There's always a risk with every surgery of implanting the defibrillator. It's not just like you're going out and giving somebody something to have in their home. This is something that you're actually implanting into their body.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about AI and sudden cardiac arrest. Tell us about AI and VFib and how AI is helping with these types of predictions.
So this is an area that, as a cardiologist and electrophysiologist, you know, I deal with day to day in delivering healthcare to my patients. And so it is, you know, close to my heart, as it were. It turns out that there are at least 1,000 Americans who are going to have this sudden cardiac arrest daily. And most of these cardiac arrests are going to happen out in the trenches, out of hospital, where people will die before getting the opportunity to receive care. For example, if in Los Angeles today, 100 people collapse with a cardiac arrest, How many do you think would survive to go home and tell the tale?
10 to 15.
Absolutely right. So by the time somebody calls 911, at least 90% of people are destined to not make it, sadly, even in cutting edge, you know, USA Today. So what we have to do is, instead of focusing on a narrow, small group of patients, as we do today, based on the clinical trials, we have to expand this to people who actually don't have a chance to get to a doctor. So for example, the measure we have to see who's at high risk today is just imaging the heart and figuring out what's the pumping function of the main chamber or the left ventricle. And if it's below a certain cutoff, we say, probably this patient needs an implantable defibrillator. It turns out that a relatively small number of people actually qualify. Most people who have a cardiac arrest don't have this marker. So we're sort of in a situation where the big gap in knowledge is we have to extend beyond this simple measurement of the left ventricular ejection fraction.
Got it. And I have a question for you. So it's my understanding that when you talk about echocardiograms, that, you know, these are one of those things, that's what you're talking about, what we're using, that AI is actually better at reading an echocardiogram than a sonographer. Is that true?
Well, Dr. Cross, you've been doing your reading.
I have.
Because just 2 weeks ago, there is a study that was published out of Cedar Sinai by my colleague in the Division of Artificial Intelligence and in the Department of Cardiology, Dr. David Ouyang, that really looked at that carefully. What Dr. Ouyang did was, a couple of years ago, he had developed this AI model that could read the echo by itself, where it would look at the image and it would say, okay, the ejection fraction is this much, as opposed to a human being reading the echo and saying the ejection fraction is this much. Now, fast forward 2.5 years, Dr. Ouyang, with the help of our colleagues who work on echocardiography, did a clinical trial to test this AI tool. And as you said, there were two main findings. One was that this AI algorithm, that's called EchoNet, did as good a job, if not better, than a human sonographer or the technician who actually does the echo and measures the ejection fraction. And secondly, also did this a little bit quicker. That is true that we're developing tools, and the low-hanging fruit is imaging, and that actually could help us both in patient care as well as workflows in the hospital.
No, it's amazing. I did read that, and I was very excited. One of the few things that I really dislike doing is trying to read images or EKGs. I'm always very nervous about the whole thing. Being a pediatrician, I don't do it very often. So the idea of having an AI there to help you out along the way, I think that's amazing. I think there's a lot of things in medicine where humans are absolutely key, where there is just no way a computer will ever be able to see a patient and feel what I can feel about what's going on in that room to know, is this a dire situation or not? Like, even particularly in pediatrics, what are the looks between the parent and the child to get the subliminal text to figure out what's going on in a situation? I just don't think that an AI will ever do that. But with being able to get large quantities of data and seeing patterns that you see in imaging, I think that AI has really the potential to be superior to humans in those regards. So I think that this is just a great way that it can be used in medicine. Tell us a little bit more about your field in cardiology and other things that are going on at Cedars to integrate AI into cardiology and to help with the diagnostic and predictive value so that patient care can become more personalized.
So Cedars-Sinai decided to really take on this problem by developing a new unit in our health system that's called Artificial Intelligence in Medicine. It's a division in the Department of Medicine, just like you would have pulmonology or hematology. And the vision for this division, as it were, is to think of the problems within the health system, use the data in a secure way to solve those problems using AI, and then deploy the AI after testing it. So the example that we just discussed of a clinical trial, which, you know, if you think of a medicine or a device for treating a patient, there's no reason why an AI algorithm shouldn't go through that same vetting process. So in the big picture, that's really what we're trying to do at Cedars-Sinai, because as healthcare providers, we deal with patients all the time. We understand, I feel, just as you mentioned earlier, the patient-physician relationship the best, but also have a better understanding of the gaps in knowledge that we need to work on to solve these AI problems. So I think when you think about how you deliver healthcare, AI has been successfully sort of published from retrospective, you know, research studies, but relatively few are being actively translated into medical practice. It's a little bit slow, but the low-hanging fruit is medical images. So at Cedars-Sinai, I was responsible for starting this division. I knew cardiology the best, so I brought on colleagues. We are five of us right now, and we are continuing to grow. We are hiring. Four of us work in cardiology, and we have a colleague who works in genomics, deep learning in genomics. And so we've been using medical images like echocardiograms, like myocardial perfusion imaging, tests that are done to detect risk of heart attacks, heart CTs, again, for heart attacks. And then we're working actively on trying to solve how several important human diseases can be diagnosed better from the human genome. So those are the kinds of things that are currently ongoing in our division.
No, it's wonderful. And I think that Cedars-Sinai is on the forefront here. I don't think that many other hospitals are actually creating an AI division to really focus on this and to make sure that they're testing it and bringing it to the patients as quickly as possible so that we can integrate it into medicine. So it's really amazing what you guys are doing at Cedars. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today or a take-home message?
I would say that in real-life medical practice, it's really going to be more about augmented intelligence rather than artificial intelligence. You know, especially with the recent discussions around the large language models like ChatGPT, there's a lot of concern. You know, there's a lot of polarization. Opinions are divided. But I feel we shouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater here. So in real life medical practice, what is more likely to happen is that there is going to be a human in the loop setup. So it's not going to be AI versus humans. This is really going to be about augmented intelligence rather than artificial intelligence. So I can see in the future at health systems like Cedars-Sinai and other places where there's a lot of development going on, where, as you mentioned, we have this added advantage of being embedded within the health system. I can see humans collaborating with AI, providing oversight, rather than AI trying to replace humans. So I think about that a lot, and that's what I see in my crystal ball.
I think you are spot on. Thank you, Dr. Chug, for joining us and sharing your expertise with us today. This has been a really interesting and fun discussion.
Thanks a lot. I enjoyed it as well.
You can visit cedars-sinai.org/discoveries to read more about artificial intelligence in medicine and all the stories in Cedars-Sinai's magazine about research and education. That's cedars-sinai.org/discoveries. That concludes this episode of Discovery, Cedars-Sinai's podcast about research and education. If you found this podcast helpful, please share it on your social channels and be sure to check out the entire podcast library for other topics that might be of interest to you. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Thanks for listening to this episode of Discoveries. I'm your host, Dr. Corey Cross.